Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. We're recording Tuesday, April 24th. BlessYouBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. Right now, to just get this out of the way at the beginning, we'll just ask that if you can support the site and the podcast as one of our Patreon patrons, we'd greatly appreciate it. You can head over to www.patreon.com/BlessYouBoys and donate there at levels from $1 up to whatever you can manage. Anything $3 or above will unlock some special features there, and we are planning to do a special podcast with our esteemed site manager, Rob Rojacki, at some point in the very near future, and that will show up only on the Patreon page. So that's basically the housekeeping. I'm your host, Brandon Day. With me is writer, author, editor, extraordinaire, Ashley McLennan. How's it going?
I don't think I have enough titles.
You probably have more than that. I almost paused because I was like, oh, I missed something there, probably.
They're probably writer, author. No, that's most of them.
Knitter.
I am knitting a fancy wrap right now.
Oh, yeah. Is this going to be available on your Etsy site?
Oh, Christ, no. The amount of time this is going to take me to make, I am keeping this for myself.
I know. It's like, oh, well, I'm putting it out there, but it'll be $400 because it took me, you know, 20 hours to do or whatever.
Yeah, no, this is going to take forever, so. Yeah.
So, once again, here we are on a Tuesday night without baseball. We didn't have baseball last night because the weather hates us. And has cursed the Tigers and their fan base with a plague of wind, rain, snow. I don't think anything else bad happened. I don't remember.
No hellfires as of yet.
Yeah, no stadium collapses. Yeah.
No hail. I think we've covered the basics.
So. Yeah, they kept it simple so far. No plague of frogs. Yeah.
Thank God.
But yeah, it's just been weird. Like, is this hard enough to get into the rhythm with a team that you know isn't going to be very good, and then to like have like
the schedule? This wasn't even the only one. The game was canceled in Baltimore today. Yeah. It was raining in Cleveland for the Cubs Indians game. It didn't look very pleasant over there. It's just everywhere.
Yeah, the Cubs didn't seem to mind though, did they?
No, but I think the Twins are wishing it had rained in New York tonight.
Yep, it's raining dingers there. For sure.
Yikes.
Yep, and yeah, the Cubs is just wailing. Wailing in Cleveland Indians, which is fun.
So great. I loved it.
Yep. Yeah, plenty of home runs there from Schwarber and Ian Happ and a bunch of people. So, yeah, Wilson Contreras, I believe, as well.
Yeah, his first one of the season, I think. If it wasn't today, it was yesterday.
Yeah, so there is at least baseball out in the world. Shohei Ohtani is pitching tonight, so without Tigers baseball or Rays baseball being already over, isn't it?
It's a game. They were playing Baltimore. Their game was canceled today.
Oh, they were the ones playing Baltimore. So yeah, we're all just kind of shut out here. But there's no tiny game to watch, at least.
Yes, I'm watching it right now. And as I observed before we started recording this, somebody pointed out on Twitter earlier this week that Mike Trout has a little jug that he keeps in the dugout that says, like, Mike's special juice or, like, Mike's special stuff. There's, like, a label on it that actually says that.
Magic and Trout sauce.
99.9% sure I just saw Shohei Ohtani drinking out of that magic jug. I didn't see the label saying it, but he was definitely drinking out of the same giant, like, pink water looking fancy jugs, so like maybe he's trying to have a little bit of that Trout luck rub off on him.
Yeah, so if he hits 3 home runs tomorrow, we'll know, like, oh, it's working, he's better than he was before, which is scary.
Yeah,
I saw he hit 101 earlier tonight. One thing that happened that we complained about last week is that the magic of the pitching ninja has returned to Twitter through MLB's brief window of wisdom. they have returned Pitching Ninja and actually made him a functioning member of the MLB, I don't know, social media team, I guess, and all of his gifts now have the MLB logo on them. And God, so that made us all happy and, you know, invited a whole bunch of trolling of Barstool Sports and their ilk and stuff, and that was going on.
I think we got to give really mad respect to Jeff Passan for everything that he did.
Yeah, Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports broke that whole thing, yep.
Just champion the whole thing, and he was like going toe-to-toe with those idiots.
Yep.
And like he just would not back down, and I think had he not given it that kind of national platform, because that article came out exactly as we were talking last week, so we shared a little bit of it over the air, but I think had that not been a thing, I think that could have just flown right under the radar and we might not have seen him reinstated, let alone given that level of credential.
Yep. But, it, you know, you just hope, you know, that's an example of, you know, MLB kind of learning their lesson a little bit about how to do a better job promoting the sport and allowing their fans to kind of help promote the sport, because this is just the way things are going with the, you know, the availability of social media and people being able to cut GIFs and edit sound, you're going to see a lot of goofy stuff like that if you just cut loose, and it's really fun. And a lot of times it's better than the stuff, you know, cut for or anything that, you know, is officially MLB related can produce. So, yep, so that was a good sign. And I say that because I've been watching Shohei Ohtani pitching GIFs, which have been hellacious, as well as Lance McCullers and his crazy, like, I don't know, his sinker that moves like 2 feet.
They really need to label that stuff NSFW. I was watching some of the Scherzer ones right after.
Oh, yeah.
And like, oh, God.
There was even some really cool Rick Porcello. Rick Porcello's changeup, like, which we, you know, the whole time he was in Detroit, we were all like, God, if Rick Porcello just had a better changeup, it's not bad. But if he had that changeup I saw today, he might have won a Cy Young a lot earlier than he did. So those are good things. What isn't so good is the fact that there just hasn't been a whole lot of Tigers baseball to talk about.
No.
Yeah. You know, they took, I think they split the series with the Royals over the weekend, split the doubleheader and then won on Saturday and lost on Sunday. And the game on Sunday, of course, featured a bullpen meltdown, which is a Tigers special, of course. It wasn't so bad from Drew Verhagen, but it wasn't very good. Buck Farmer wasn't really any better, but it resulted in Drew Verhagen being DFA'd, which leaves an open spot on the 40-man roster that the Tigers have yet to fill. They did call up Mike Gerber, but he's already on the 40-man roster, so he's up at least briefly, maybe just for this National League series with the Pirates as kind of a pinch hit, you know, backup player to kind of help fill in for, you know, having to pinch hit for the pitchers and all that kind of stuff, but
give you a little utility depth.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know if it's going to last much longer. I wish the Tigers would just keep him up and do something with Victor Reyes, like trade for him or just get rid of him or something, because he's
make
not playing.
Some kind of a move. Yeah.
I mean, it's bad for him too. I mean, he's 23 and he's not going to get any better just sitting around on the bench, you know.
No, and there's no room, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's only, you got to kind of move it or lose it, basically, right?
Yep. And, you know, he's I guess he can play center field, but he's not a particularly good center fielder. And Leonis Martin has continued to hit, so.
And he's been defensively really good in center, I think. Yep. More of a value out there than he's been at bat, even though his bat has picked up a bit. But we've seen some pretty impressive hustle from him out there, so.
Yep. And he's a really good defender, kind of always has been. So, you know, as much as it kind of feels like, you know, we don't need these veterans kind of blocking the young guys, that's been really good for the pitching staff. And anything that makes the pitching staff look better than they are and helps them out is a good thing. So, yeah.
I mean, also, if you get rid of Martin, Ron Gardenhire's not going to know how to build a lineup.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to lead off at that point. I guess you just plug in Jacoby Jones, because Jacoby Jones is red hot and you just can't be stopped at this point. So.
Oh, I love seeing it. He's looked so good. He had that walk-off home run. It's that amazing interview, the post-game interview on the doubleheader.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Where he was just like, I was kind of hungry, so I wanted to end it. And then they asked how he did it. And he's just like, you know, we go out, make shit happen. And I'm like, God bless Fox Sports Detroit for not bleeping this out, because he absolutely said, make shit happen on air.
Yep, just trying to make some shit happen. And he has.
And I feel bad saying it, because, you know, Maltek had to go down to bring Jones up, but Jones has been performing exactly as people wanted him to perform last year, right after spring break, and I don't think he's going to give the team a reason to send him down again. Like, he is holding on to that position for dear life.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because, I mean, he struck out so much in the minor leagues that, I mean, I think, you know, for me and a lot of other people, we'd kind of given up on him. It was sort of like, okay, this year is sort of the last chance, and he seems to know that and has made some changes in his swing a little bit. He's shortened up a little. He's walking a little bit more. Hasn't been striking out that much. And
yeah, his discipline looks great.
Yeah, it really does.
Comparatively, I mean, like, it's day and night compared to where he was last year.
Yep. I mean, he has a career 200 batting average and 586 OPS, but this year it's 293 and 874 so far. And obviously it's early. Pitchers are going to change how they deal with him. All those tests and challenges are yet to come. But, you know, you got two home runs. You've got three stolen bases out of him in 41 at-bats. And you know he's going to play brilliant defense and run the bases well. So as long as he's putting the bat on the ball, he's going to be hard to get out of that lineup. And obviously the Tigers seem to be pretty stoked with what they're seeing so far, maybe a year later than they hope to see it. So, yep.
Yeah, and Machek hasn't shown any improvements in the minors, so it's not like they're cursing themselves for sending him down.
Yep. Oh, you know, and I just realized this. I did not know this. Jacoby Jones' official nickname, as listed on the Detroit Tigers site, is Juicy J.
No!
Yes. Juicy J.
Jacoby, no!
Juicy J from Chickasaw, Oklahoma.
Oh, can we not? I mean, we've already accepted that Candyman is a thing. Can we not do Juicy J?
I know. Candyman at least is better than Candy. I was really afraid it was going to be like, oh, they're just going to call him Candy. But
we gotta... I just like that he posts the candy emojis for himself.
Yep, so you can't really argue it. Yeah.
Oh, bless him.
Every time he has a big hit, for those of you who aren't on Twitter, yes, he posts various candy emojis.
It's usually like the candy emoji and a bomb, which I love. Yeah. Because he just embraces the candy bomb as a thing, yep. Which I'm here for. Yep. I love it.
He's having a good time. And Jacoby Jones' middle name, oh, I didn't know this either, is Mylon.
Mylon?
Mylon. That is fascinating.
That's not a real name.
Yeah, that's how he ended up with Juicy J, I guess. Everybody was like, well, we can't use the middle name for anything. We're just going to... Yeah. So Juicy J... You know, did really well on 420, which made us all laugh because of his previous weed suspension. He, you know, had the game winner that day. But, yeah, it's just been super fun to watch. And, you know, it's just, you just don't know going into a season like this, like, if the team is even going to be entertaining. And so far, they've done everything possible to at least be entertaining. And we greatly appreciate it. Thank you. Now, if we can just get some decent weather.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, Drew Verhagen got DFA'd. That's not a big shock. I mean, I know some people kind of thought I was maybe a little bit hard on Drew Verhagen in the preseason, but he just hasn't really ever shown anything consistent, you know, consistently with his command, especially. He did strike out more guys this year, so I don't know. You never know. There might be something coming around there with his with a new slider, but he needs to be in the minor leagues and to continue to work and try to find some way to keep his command straight. So he's out of there.
Yeah, I think Gardenhire had a couple comments about that, something along the lines of, yeah, we really like him, but he hasn't been doing well. So we're kind of at a position where we've got to start getting rid of these guys who aren't working.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that, actually. I like that the team, even though they know they're in a rebuild, isn't, like, messing around leaving guys up that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Like, there are a couple more guys I wouldn't mind seeing kind of go the way, but like,
yeah, for sure.
It's nice to know they're not just going to be like, well, we're here to lose anyway, so we might as well just leave these guys up embarrassing themselves.
Yeah, especially the guys who are a little bit older and, like, you know, probably aren't really part of a future rebuilt contender.
No, and like, how many seasons has Verhagen had to prove himself?
Yeah, I mean, I think we drafted Drew Verhagen in 2012. I know he's 27 at least, so. And, you know, he's had some surgeries and injury issues and stuff, but he's a couple years removed from that. So, yeah, if he can't get it together this year, I think, you know, probably odds are slim that he ever will, if not already gone. So, yeah, I mean, he, you know, it kind of is what it is there. The Tigers obviously have liked him and shown a lot of faith in him. So for them to make this move, I think you're right, kind of does show that they're a little bit more, you know, they're just going to be a little more proactive with things this year. They didn't wait very long for Mikey Matuk to struggle before they were like, nope, we're trying someone else, so.
No, and that's great. I mean, as much as I'm a Matuk fan, I'm also a fan of seeing the team win games. Yep. So
and seeing young guys get a shot, and
and Jones hasn't disappointed since he's come up. And I think had he floundered, they would have been like, well, let's maybe give Reyes more reps. Let's do this. I think they would have just tried continually slotting guys in there until they found something that fit at least a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, because for a rebuilding team, they don't really have a lot of space on the roster, and it's sort of cramped our style, I think, a little bit. So, yeah, if you're in left field or you're one of the kind of, you know, last two or three relievers up in the bullpen, you're not in safe shape at all. You need to perform, or they're just going to kind of move on from it. And maybe that's a reflection of the fact that, you know, there's going to be a lot more pressure from young guys coming up. Maybe even later on this year, but especially next year. And so anybody who's not sort of, anyone who's above double A right now probably needs to start proving something, or they're going to get, you know, shuffled aside as some of the, you know, the pitchers at Erie, like some of the relievers, Matt Hall, John Schreiber, those guys, you know, could probably pitch in the major leagues already. I don't know if the Tigers will rush them up later on this year, but But there's just, yeah, there's just too many guys who need a shot now. You know, Mike Gerber needs a shot. He's 25. He's probably not going to get much better hitting minor league pitching. Probably the same is true for Kristen Stewart. Dowell Lugo maybe needs a little more time. But, yeah, those guys are going to start pushing their way up. So, yeah, I like that they've been pretty proactive so far with that. So, but, yeah, I don't know. There isn't a whole lot else to say about the Tigers, unfortunately. Like, we just can't seem to get some consistent games in here. I guess
we can talk about the Blaine Hardy starting pitcher show.
Yeah, yeah. I know some people are very, very excited about Blaine Hardy, who has put together three dominant starts in a row for the Toledo Mudhens. And I think, you know, this was just to kind of, you know, kind of fill a void where they only had four starters for a little while. But he's kind of taken it and run with it so far.
I mean, good for him. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't particularly agree that we need to, like, bring him up and rush him into a starting role for the Tigers.
Yeah.
But I think that
if there was even a spot, yeah.
Yeah, well, that he's factoring, that he's learning to become that long relief guy in a different way. Mm-hmm. Like, a guy who can go 3, 4, 5 dominant innings in the minors can be a 3-inning long relief guy for you in the majors. And I'm intrigued to see how that goes, because he isn't on the 40-man right now, is he?
Blaine is not. No, he was actually DFA'd.
They
designated him like in late March, and really surprised us, because we didn't hear about it until he'd cleared and was back with the team. So we didn't even know he was off the 40-man roster until then. But yeah, so that
to me would be an interesting call up. Like, not again as a starter, but as somebody for bullpen replacement. But at the same time, I kind of want to keep him in AAA, kind of sorting himself out there until he really gets that niche going. So I'm curious as to how they'll do that.
Yeah, and I'm just curious if there's anything new going on there, because if it's just Blaine Hardy, you know, doing his usual thing, and, you know, he's just kind of hit a stretch where his command is good. I mean, he's been effective in the major leagues, you know, for multiple years as a reliever, and so it shouldn't really surprise anyone that he can handle AAA hitters like he has. Maybe not quite as well as he has, but, you know, typically those guys aren't going to be too much trouble for him, and he knows who to pitch around in lineups and that kind of thing. So unless I hear there's something going on there, like he picked up some velocity or, you know, he's got a new pitch, I'm assuming he's still down there just, you know, blowing high fastballs at 90 miles an hour and surprising people by blowing them past, you know, hitters with that, and then dropping a pretty nasty curveball, which he's always had. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's, you know, anything new there, but it does seem like that, you know, the Tigers signed Travis Wood for a reason. Like, they really wanted that sort of lefty, long man, spot starter type of guy. And it feels like, you know, just sort of by circumstance, they're sort of shoehorning Daniel Norris into that role, which isn't necessarily, I don't know, it might be a good fit for him, but it doesn't feel like it's by design as much as necessity. And yeah, and maybe Blaine Hardy, yeah, like you're saying, maybe Blaine Hardy can come up and take that on. I, you know, with the speed that they DFA'd Drew Verhagen and Blaine Hardy, you do have to kind of look at Mike Fiers and kind of wonder, see, I said it right, because this might be the last time Mike Fiers, that if, you know, if Mike Fiers doesn't kind of get it together and look a little better, like how long they're going to wait with him blocking Norris from the rotation. But, you know, you figure he's got to get a couple more starts, I suppose, just because they're paying him and veteran.
Yeah, he's on that 1 year. You kind of want to make sure you've, you know, given up all your options with a guy before you, you know, kiss him goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been weird to watch. Like, I watched plenty of Mike Fiers a couple years ago, and he's like, he's just such a weird, funky pitcher with that overhand delivery. Kind of has like this slow windup, and then all of a sudden kind of explodes and throws the thing over the top, and it's like 87, 88 mile per hour fastball. I don't know. It's surprising he's as effective as he is. I assume there's, you know, pretty good deception in that delivery, but apart from his changeup, I haven't really seen anything look even MLB quality as of yet. So I don't know. I don't know how long he's going to be for the team if he can't kind of turn it around a little bit. I assume Francisco Liriano's got a lot longer leash just because of the career he's had. But
well, and he's been better in everything we've seen him in. I'm not saying like Cy Young contention or anything, but he's definitely not been a disappointing pickup.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And you still see the ability to just strike out a ton of guys. So even the last outing, you know, he went 5 1/3 and gave up 3 earned runs. You know, that's not that bad.
No.
Yeah, he's been reasonably good. He's still walking people, but that's kind of what he does. Walk people, strike them out, not give up many hits. He gave up 3 earned runs in that last outing with 2 hits.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is. Like, you don't, it's almost like a weird Justin Verlander-ish type profile, where apart from the walks, where it's like strikeouts, hardly any hits, But when someone does make contact, it tends to, like, go a long way. So it's kind of peculiar. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. I think those are kind of the next, well, at least Fires is the next guy kind of on the hot seat to sort of get it together and get going. Maybe Buck Farmer as well. You know, he's been pretty good to start with, but the last couple times out has been a little rocky. Meanwhile, Joe Jimenez continues to pitch great. And that brings us to the one thing that really did annoy me about that series is Ron Gardenhire using Shane Green in back-to-back games in a doubleheader, which is just stupid.
Insane, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, you know, you want to win these games and Shane Green's your best reliever, but he's also our prime trade chip and you shouldn't be messing with his health by having him pitch like 4 hours, you know, innings 4 hours apart from each other. So I don't know, you know, I mean, obviously Ron Gardenhire has carte blanche to do what he wants, but the Tigers front office needs to put down a couple guidelines on guys like that. Like, do not, you know, just do not mess with the guys that we're going to need to get the most out of this year and trade them.
Let's try not to break the dude who's supposed to get us prospects in a couple months.
Yep. Because other than those appearances, like Shane Green, you know, kind of had that rough first outing and then was dominating, and then you use him, you know, back-to-back on the same day, and then he was gone all weekend when we kind of needed him, and so you ended up using Verhagen and Farmer, and you lose those games, and Shane Green, because you used him for the second in the second game of the doubleheader, didn't pitch as well, lost that game. So there you go.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Cause and effect.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll learn a little lesson there and not get out of hand. It was fun on that the Saturday game though. They just absolutely just torched. Who was it? Was it Danny? Yeah, Danny Duffy. Just massive.
Danny Duffy. Yeah, oh, that was a great game.
Yeah, it was fun to see them kind of just erupt and you know just rack up a ton of hits. They had 16 hits in that game. They drew 8 walks. Like it was just a carnival of home runs, walks, etc. And Jacoby Jones, of course, homered again in that game. So yeah, he's just on fire. The kid's on fire right now.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. It's a lot of fun.
it has been, and that's kind of the nice relief. Like I really thought that this season was going to be a struggle to get through. And it was like, oh, God, we're going to have to watch 162 of these shitty games. But you know what? They're keeping it interesting. They're establishing pretty early on that there are still plenty of guys on the team that are going to be fun to cheer for.
Yeah.
And I'm into it. I'm here for it.
Yep. And because we've missed so many games with postponements, I'm actually, like, desperate. I'm actually, like, craving Tigers baseball right now, which was not a feeling I expected to have too often.
Well, I was so hyped because, like, I usually get home just before we record this on Tuesday, so I can't watch anything. But my other plans canceled, so I'm like, oh, yeah, I can get in some of the game. This is going to be awesome. And rain delay.
Yep. Yep. Here we go again. Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, other than that, you know, I guess the best thing to talk about is, you know, Miguel Cabrera has looked very good. Like, we're still waiting for him to start lifting a few more balls out of the park. But other than that, I think he's hitting 300 with an 855 OPS. He's looking great. Nick Castellanos has looked good. Jamer Candelario has looked awesome. And, like, you know, maybe he's a little more than we thought we had in him in the power department.
We super won that trade.
Yep. Oh, that's a huge win. I believe Justin Wilson pitched again tonight.
He did. He didn't look bad either.
Yeah, but didn't he have like a 6-7 run lead?
he had a 7 run lead going into that inning.
They were like, okay,
so it was
safe.
A pretty safe buffer to use him in that particular situation, but he didn't look bad. So, I mean, that's something.
Yep. Yeah. So here we are. Yeah, the Tigers are 9-11, and something we kind of mentioned earlier, we talked about earlier on the site channels was just the fact that the Tigers actually, there's 5 teams right now with a worse record than the Tigers do. No, I'm wrong about that. There's 8 teams with a worse record than the Tigers do. Although I haven't updated this to reflect whatever's gone on tonight. But you know, you've got the Tampa Bay Rays, the Texas Rangers, the Baltimore Orioles, the Chicago White Sox, Kansas City Royals, and in the National League, the Padres, Marlins, and Reds all have a worse record than the Tigers do. And
substantially worse.
Yeah, I mean, the Marlins are 5-17. The Reds are 4-18 going into tonight's play. So, yeah, you know, it's just weird. You know, we're at a weird time in that it seems like the best teams got better this offseason. You know, I mean, the Astros adding Garrett Cole is just cruel and unusual. The Yankees getting Stanton and then, you know, having a problem and just randomly being able to pick up Neil Walker to plug in at second base, which is just not right. You know, Boston signed JD Martinez. So the rich are getting richer. And meanwhile, you know, it may be really hard for the Tigers to finish last. I mean, I don't know if it's possible.
I don't, at the way I'm looking at this, I don't think it is. Like, right now, the Tigers are second in the AL Central.
Yep.
Like, I don't know how that happened. And it's really weird. I mean, I'm not mad at it. They're not over 500, so it's still anybody's game, but it's so weird to see. Like, they're only 2.5 games back from the Indians.
Yeah.
And that's counting tonight's Indians loss, but, like...
And the Twins lost
Indians,
tonight.
Yeah, the Indians have lost 6 of their last 10. And, like, it's weird.
Yeah.
Like, again, small sample size. We're still in the first month of play, but it's so bizarre. Like, I'm looking at these standings right now, and there's ones that are surprising. Like, who would have thought the Jays would have been second in the East? I think everyone had that spot going to the Yankees. And they're neck and neck. They're only a game apart, but it's still... super bizarre.
Yeah. And Toronto's got some firepower they can call up too, so yeah
they've been looking great. The Angels are right neck and neck with the Astros right now, which I don't think anybody would have called, even with the Ohtani pickup. The Phillies are second in the NL East right now.
Yep.
And they're only a half game back from the Mets, and the fact that the Mets are on top and the Nationals are fourth is just bonkers to me.
Yeah. And, you know, people keep saying the Nationals, you know, are having all these injury problems. And, yeah, you know, Eaton's been out. They, you know, they've had some injuries. Who's the other one? Daniel Murphy's been out as well. But, you know, they played without Adam Eaton all last year. Their pitching is all healthy. And, yeah, so far it hasn't been a very good start for Dave Martinez. Whereas Gabe Kapler, who started out, you know, looking like a fool the first couple games and getting booed.
People are like, oh.
Oh, maybe he does know what he's doing. Maybe one silly mistake isn't, you know, the whole
thing. Maybe this Gabe Kapler show isn't such a bad thing after all. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody should have listened to Brandon and Ashley when they suggested that he be interviewed for the Tigers job. Just saying.
Meanwhile, we're already getting the comments like, oh, you see how the team plays with so much more energy under Ron Gardenhire. It's like, people... They're 9-11, okay? When Brad Ausmus came in 2014, I think the Tigers started 27-14 that year, and we all thought they were going to just run all the way to the World Series.
Yeah.
It's very early, and Ron Gardenhire has faster, younger players. That's all that is. That's all it is. Younger, faster players equal better base running and more exciting baseball a lot of the time, rather than waiting for J-Up or JD to crush one out and get some people on base ahead of them. You know, there's a lot more chaos going on, and yeah, that can be fun. A little better defense out there. It's kind of more of an entertaining style of baseball, which is interesting because, of course, that's not the way baseball has been going in recent years, as more strikeouts, more walks, more dingers has been the nature of the game. So, I don't know, we're going to have to see if maybe they fixed the ball and recorrected the ball to a softer, you know, less Super Bowl-esque model somehow.
Well, I think that would discount what's going on with the Yankees, so...
Yeah, and it may just be that the weather was just freezing balls cold for, like, the first 3 weeks of the season. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, it's been a kind of an odd start. But, yeah, maybe especially that's just from covering the Tigers and just having it all be so odd. Like, you know, with all these postponements and, like, is the game today? Is it going to be tomorrow? I know some of my family members have been getting in touch and just sort of like, are the Tigers playing? Like, what's going on?
Like, well, even today I was like, are we postponed? Are we delayed? What's happening?
Yep. Yep. It's been weird. And, you know, I mean, I look through like these eight teams that were ahead of, and, you know, it's not necessarily true that like all of them are trying to tank or like not spending any money. Obviously the Rangers aren't trying to tank, although kind of coming into the season, I didn't see how the hell they thought they were going to contend with that pitching staff. But, you know, they're spending $133 million. The Orioles have almost $150 million payroll, and they're just god-awful. And I don't think anybody is surprised by that fact at all. So,
no, it's terrible. They're going to trade Machado at the break 100%.
Yep, and they're going to get very little compared to what they could have got this offseason.
Yeah, it's going to be a mess, but he's going to end up on a contending team, and it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if they just go crazy. Like, because that's kind of what they need to do. Like, you know, they're going to lose all these guys, and what they're going to have Kevin Gausman and Dylan Bundy as two good starting pitchers on that roster.
Oh, they should move everybody they can.
Yeah, they need to just go whole hog, but they won't because the Orioles are just weird and do things in their own bizarro fashion. So,
honestly, right now, I'm mad at the Rays for not trying to move guys like Archer, Harder, and Colomé, and even Kiermaier, who is hurt again and out until he had thumb surgery. He jammed his thumb. he's out until July.
Something about fun outfielders, like where they just get hurt no matter what. Yeah.
But I mean, I look at that and like, you can't even say that they're tanking because they didn't move everybody they possibly could. And I don't think that they're trying to lose the way they are.
Yeah.
It's those really close, tight games and like one run leads, one run losses. And there's tons of those, which the Rays are notorious for. But like you have a guy like Kiermaier who was batting leadoff for most of the beginning of the season, batting like 0-5-0. Like, fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you can't control stuff like that. That's not a tank. You're not asking a professional player to go out there and be that bad. It just happens.
Yeah,
so,
and because the Rays owner is just such a ridiculous spendthrift, you know, I guess that's kind of what it comes down to. They're not trying to tank. That front office isn't trying to tank. I mean, they traded Jake Odorizzi and who? Steven Souza? Is that right?
Steven Souza Jr., Evan Longoria.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously Longoria. But it's just kind of like whenever they're coming up to it, like, okay, we can't let this guy get into his last year before free agency. Like, we've got to try to max value before then.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. And that's
they let
tanking.
Guys like Alex Cobb walk. They let guys like Logan Morrison walk. But I mean, Logan Morrison came out just this week and he's like, nobody on that team wants to win. And I'm like, oh, Lomo, maybe never speak.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. So that's the thing. Like, how many of these tanking teams are actually tanking? And how many, if you look at a team like the White Sox, I don't think that they're trying to tank. I think you have a team that's made up of a couple guys who are past their prime and a bunch of really young kids that haven't figured their stuff out yet.
Yeah.
And that team is on the verge of being crazy good.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not that impressed, honestly. I know that's what everybody says. I'm probably the outlier and, like, totally wrong, but I just can't get past the fact that they traded Chris Sale, Adam Eaton, Jose Quintana, Todd Frazier, you know, all these guys, and they couldn't win with them. And now we're supposed to buy the Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, Lucas Giolito, Eloy Jimenez, like, you know, it's going to all be different. I mean, I don't know, maybe. They should at least get back
in 2 years when, like, Sports Illustrated is like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, the White Sox, you're 2022 World Series champions, and we'll figure it out. We'll see who was right then, Brandon.
Exactly. A little picture of me like, oh, look what this guy said on this podcast 2 years ago.
We'll have it recorded. It's just here forever.
What a jackass that guy is.
Podcasts are forever.
Yeah.
And I will regret that one day because I never think about what I say before I say it.
I know. We do kind of try to wing it and not sit here like machines going through like, oh, topic number four is going to be. So, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think any team is trying to tank. Like, I just think that's almost impossible. There's definitely some front office, you know, groups that are, you know, happily not succeeding.
Yeah, I think there's definitely guys that aren't going to go out there and spend in the off season if they don't see a win coming their way. But I think that's kind of logical management style. Like, what are you supposed to do? Go out and spend $100 million every off season just to try to maybe hit third in your division?
Yeah, that's true. But I do think there's, you know, there's some middle ground. Yeah, I mean, I understand. Like, certain teams, like, there's just no point, you know, trying to, like, drop $40 million on two big-time free agents that are going to tie up your payroll for 5 or 6 years.
I think a lot of teams are playing a long game as opposed to tanking, my take on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the case. Although there are certainly, you know, some, you know, pretty deadbeat owners out there, too, who I don't want to let off the hook. You know, looking at you, Oakland and Pittsburgh and maybe Tampa, although they've been better in recent years. I think their ending payroll last year was $100 million, which for them is, you know, kind of.
I think it was like 77. Like, let's not get carried away.
Nah, I looked it up. By the end of the year, it was 100. I don't know if they made some deals or whatever. Yeah, I looked on COTS contracts. Sorry, it sounds like I'm taking this all off my head, but no, I'm staring at a sheet of paper with official looking data in front of me. But their opening day payroll this year was $76 million, so maybe that's what you're thinking of. Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. So I don't know, they spent some money along the way last year. Maybe that was just, you know, the fact of, and maybe that's an expression of the fact that they needed, you know, someone like Evan Longoria, Sousa, guys who were making a little bit more money to kind of go. But yeah, in general, like, yeah, I don't really see like the huge tanking situation going on. I just see the teams not really trying to win so much. And, you know, if that changes in a year or two and they end up winning, I guess they'll be proven right, eh?
Yeah.
I just wanted to
we'll
say
see what...
eh to you.
A? You just want to say A? You want to make fun of me for being Canadian, Brandon?
No, that's a sign of respect for your fine nation. Because I love Canada.
Do you?
I do. Canada's great. Right. Nobody says anything bad about Canada.
I mean, people make fun of us a lot, but that's because they're jealous.
Yeah. I mean, they don't really make fun of America because they're terrified to death of us right now. I don't know what's going to happen next here in this reality TV show of a nation we've got going.
Yeah. It's a nightmare world you live in.
Yeah, it's chaos. Chaos down here. All right, so to get on to a little bit more chaos, we're going to talk about our old buddy, my favorite baseball player who ever lived, Justin Verlander.
Jesus. Who, Justin Verlander's been making friends this week.
Yeah, he's really been a popular fellow. And you know, we were talking about this before we got on here, and it does kind of seem to all go back to the tweet, you know, the whole I'm going to dominate soon tweet of, I think, 2015 that was, or 2016.
Yeah,
when he then came out and just has basically torched the world ever since. And, you know, before that, he was never really that vocal a guy. He was kind of Mr., you know, keep everything under wraps. Like, he didn't want to talk about how he threw his slider. He didn't like to talk about the way he pitched different guys. You know, I remember someone finding out that he held his curveball without touching any of the seams. And for a while, he was kind of annoyed about that and kind of put out some, like, you know, some propaganda, counter propaganda to suggest that maybe that was just a way he would play with it sometimes. And now he's like an open book. And I don't know if it's, you know, these are just the joys of, you know, being happily married now. And, you know, he's an older guy.
Having a World Series ring.
Yeah, being a veteran, you know, leader and presence on the team and in Major League Baseball generally. I mean, before Ohtani came along, I'm not sure who's a bigger star, like an actual, like, recognizable star than Justin Verlander in the game right now. And partly that's because he married Kate Upton and that whole story and all that. But he's also kind of just had this longevity as kind of the you know, the greatest old school horsiest horse, you know, left on the course, as all these guys go out throwing five innings nowadays. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's changed for him, but he's definitely been more vocal. And he got into it a little bit this week with Tim Anderson of the Chicago White Sox, who, you know, to his credit, is kind of an irritant. And broke up Justin Verlander's no-hitter, I think, in the fifth inning on Friday.
Yeah, I don't think you can get real excited about a no-hitter in the fifth inning. Yeah. And I say this as somebody who will get excited about a no-hitter in the fifth inning.
But as a pitcher, and, you can't, yeah.
And I say this also as somebody who still has not forgiven Jerod Dyson for bunting in that Mariners game last year.
Oh, yeah.
Where Justin had a perfect game going.
Yeah.
Like, that was infuriating.
Yeah.
But, like,
but even that, like, from a baseball perspective, hey, you're trying to win. It was still close.
You have to try to win until the very end. Like, I don't know. I think that it's stupid, the idea that you should let an opposing player who just happens to be having a dominant outing, like, win it.
Sure.
Doesn't that take away from a person's no-hitter or a perfect game to know that the guy's letting them win?
For sure. And before we go too far, I agree with that, and so does Justin Verlander. Like, that wasn't what annoyed Justin Verlander. He was like, fine, you know, obviously you're excited, you got your hit, you broke up the no-hitter, you're trying to fire up your team. He did say that, but it was then that Tim Anderson, I believe, stole second base on a 3-0 count where Verlander walked, what's his first, I think it's Omar Narvaez. And basically Tim Anderson took off towards second like he was stealing the base and was clapping it up like he'd stolen a base. And that apparently started to tick Justin Verlander off. But what this all came down to is then Tim Anderson got caught kind of leaning off second base, you know, attempted to steal. It was sort of an attempted double steal, I think, if I remember right. I only saw this once. And basically they both ended up at second base and Verlander picked off Omar Narvaez, and then kind of gave it to Tim Anderson a little bit, like, oh yeah, baby, you know, and kind of did the same, like, you know, I'm pumped about that, as Anderson did when he reached base, and kind of gave it back to him, which is fine. Like, at that point, I don't really have any problem. Like, this is just, you know, boys being stupid boys on the baseball field, getting upset about that. But I think where it all went wrong is that Justin couldn't keep his mouth shut and had to come in and explain this entire thing to the press, which he didn't used to do. He used to be Mr. like, oh, you know, that's just baseball.
We'll leave it on the field. It is what it is.
Yeah, but okay, here's his quote. So he says, you know, regarding Anderson's exuberance when he stole, or sort of didn't actually steal second base. All right, so he's stealing 3-0 in a 5-0 game. That's probably not such great baseball. I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, I don't know. But he celebrated that, though. And it's like, hey, I'm not even worried about you right now. You know, the score is 5-0. I'm given the high leg kick. I know you can steal. If I don't want you to steal, I'll be more aware of you. But I'm just trying to get this guy out at the plate with two outs. So he goes through that, and then after Verlander and Anderson kind of like talked whatever smack they talked to each other, he said, well, hey, I'm just very thankful he gave me an out. And that's what I said, and he didn't like it. But hey, that's not my fault. That's his fault. I'm not going to let the situation dictate what I do out there. I'm going to slow everything down, and that's what a veteran does. He sees the game, he plays the game, and he plays the game, wait for emphasis,
right way.
The right way.
Drink! Drink!
And that's where it all goes wrong for me. And I cannot back Justin Verlander on that. And it's, you know, that's where he kind of loses the plot for me.
Play the right way.
I'm so sick of the right way.
Yeah, I mean, however you play baseball best is the right way for you. And it may be different for everyone. Like, stoic guys, there's exuberant guys, there's guys who take offense to everything, there's guys who never even notice what other players do. And at this point, yeah, you know, and we know, you know, Justin Verlander is a red ass. Like, this is the way it's always been. Like, you know, and Max Scherzer, same way. There's plenty of guys like this, but they don't say it. Like, that's, to me, all that is fine on the field. Like, I like emotion. I like anger. I like guys getting charged on the mound. I love all of it. But what I don't want to hear is someone come off the field and then try to justify themselves, you know, in some kind of rational context that doesn't have anything to do with the heat of the moment. Because you just sound like an idiot. And that's what Justin Verlander sounds like here to me, is an idiot, you know, being pissy with Tim Anderson. And Tim Anderson is kind of an irritating type player. That's sort of the way he plays. He's got a little bit of like Ian Kinsler in him. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of nonsense. It's like, how about you just keep your mouth shut and play baseball, Justin Verlander, for a little while? Because, you know, it's all getting me too much.
Yeah, it set me the wrong way. And I miss JV, and I loved Justin Verlander when he was with the Tigers, and I was thrilled to see him win that World Series. But sometimes you just got to be like, dude, come on. Like, you're Justin Verlander. Everybody fucking knows you're Justin Verlander. Maybe just, like, let it go.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, count the innumerable accolades that you have and the gigantic fortune that you and your wife are amassing and the goodwill of a great many people around the game and just be like, eh. Whatever, you know, he's just a little punk kid. I guess the only saving grace to this is that it didn't turn into a Latin American player versus a white Anglo-American player.
Because
that's always the thing, you know. And we've talked about this, you know, kind of on the MLB channel a little bit, but just the fact that, you know, and obviously there are, you know, I think it can be a little bit over-characterized that, you know, Latin American players are super exuberant and everybody bat flips and everybody, like, runs the bases and high-fives each other, even on the opposing team. It's not really like that. There's plenty of guys who are stoic, hard-ass type guys. I mean, I could hold up Yadier Molina as a good example of a dude who's very much a right-way type guy but is a Latin American player. But by and large, these kind of things tend to happen, you know, when someone like Jose Fernandez annoys someone like, say, Brian McCann. The legislator of the right way. And this kind of stuff just gets to be, you know, nonsensical. Like, everyone plays the game the way they want to play. Fans like to see players have a good time.
I don't think we need to live in a world where we're, like, policing the idea of people enjoying their home runs.
Yeah. And it really, you know, and it all just, you know, and it just all strikes a really sour note when someone does something like that. Because it's just, you know, you're upset because you got beat. And now the guy is, you know, celebrating in a way you don't like. But really, you're just upset because you got beat. And now you're trying to find some justification to be a jackass. And that's what Brian McCann did on a couple of occasions. There's plenty of guys who are kind of notorious from that.
Well, so, I mean, it's what Ian Kinsler did at the WBC with Team Puerto Rico. It's what...
Maybe. I don't know. I was a little...
Oh, it was the right way discussion. I don't...
I know. You shouldn't even bring it up on under those terms. I agree. Although I understood what Ian Kinsler was trying to say, which is just that he doesn't mad about other people. He was just saying, if I play this way, it's okay. You know, if I want to play this way, it should be okay too. So, I don't know. I understand, though. Some people definitely took it that way, and it had the stink of it. So, I don't know either.
Yeah, it's dicey. You just gotta... I think to judge somebody else's way of playing, if it doesn't impede yours, is just silly.
Yeah. And isn't it all just, like, trying to find a way to, like, you know, make up for what you couldn't do on the field or your team couldn't do on the field, like trying to find some kind of argument. You're like, oh, ethics.
It is literally a child's game. Like, let people have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Let people have fun. And if other people don't want to have fun, whatever, that's their business too. But when these two things meet, it's never as much fun. No. Unless people just fly off the handle and get stupid mad about actual baseball stuff, in which case I find it thoroughly entertaining. So, but that's the problem. You know, I'm a mixed martial arts fan. I'm a hockey fan. I can't get over liking some heat. Like, I don't mind that players all slap hands that are buddies, you know, with their actual buddies before games. None of that stuff ever bothers me. But I also am not bothered when players take offense and get super angry. Just keep it on the field and keep your mouth shut after the game and don't come out sounding like a jackass trying to justify your nonsense, because it's just nonsense. And sometimes that nonsense amuses me and it's fun. But I don't need to, like, hear you kind of try to, you know, have some kind of rationale. Like, oh, the unwritten rules state clearly in unwritten rule 4, section 2. Nope. So, but yeah, I don't know. Justin Verlander is a salty individual, because then there was a White Sox fan screaming, "You guys suck," at the Astros, I guess, the whole game from behind the dugout. And he, you know, wrote up 3 signs that said, "No, you suck," like one word on each of them, and slowly unveiled them with a big grin on his face to her, to the much, to the delight of Astros fans all around her, but still kind of childish.
Stupid, because if you've ever, ever been to a White Sox game, that's just it.
Yeah.
Like, if ever I can hear it audibly while watching Tigers games, and it's just like, Detroit sucks.
Especially White
Detroit
Sox.
Detroit sucks. They're notorious for it. It's all they do.
Yeah.
And like one of my first games live ever was a White Sox game, and this guy behind me would not stop chanting Detroit sucks the entire time. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I like turned around and looked at him, and he was just like,
oh, are you upset?
He's like, enemy in the territory, and I'm like, oh my god, bro.
Really? South Side of Chicago and Philadelphia definitely have some commonalities.
Yeah. So I mean, like, and he should know that he played 19 games a year here in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, half of that because you're playing half of them at home, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. And, I mean, he definitely, you know, understands the drill. And I mean to kind of leaven it, it wasn't like he was all upset. Like,
no, he was
grinning on his face and was just messing with her back. But it is just kind of funny to see him responding to things like that for a guy who is, you know, so long, Mr. like, you know, lunch pail, like, I'm going out there, I'm going to dominate, pitch as deep as I can, and not really have a whole lot to say about it after. I don't know. I don't know if that's just, you know, he's gone Hollywood. I really don't know. But he definitely is expressing himself much more than we used to see from him, which is just kind of weird and funny. So
yeah, it's, I think I would have found the sign thing a lot funnier if it hadn't come right on the heels of the whole, like, play the game the right way thing.
I know. And if he hadn't said that, I probably kind of would have taken his side, because I don't have any problem with the fact that after Tim Anderson was kind of a dick about, you know, making a big fuss about really nothing that he did on the field, that Justin kind of gave it to him back when he picked off Narvaez. Like, that, I love that. I love that.
No,
I love that
great.
They were kind of mad.
I'm here for that.
Yep, me too. But don't come out there and talk about the right way and sound like a dummy. So
it's the same thing. I get fired up if somebody, like, throws a teammate under the bus for doing something wrong.
Yeah.
It's like, everybody watching that game knows that that guy messed up. You don't need to be the one out there telling the press that he did.
Yep.
Like, anybody with eyeballs can see that that bullpen guy totally screwed the pooch. Nobody needs to hear a teammate going, oh, you know, Drew Verhagen went out there and sucked, like, the big egg.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, we know, but that was rude.
Yeah. What, like, are we going to do the next time you suck the big egg, buddy? Yeah,
like, that doesn't make friends on the team, and you need, like, that clubhouse gel, and that just doesn't do it.
Yep. Yeah, it's, you know, just some kind of childish nonsense, and yeah, I don't really know. You know, maybe it's just Justin Verlander being, you know, getting used to being, like, Mr. Quotable, you know, elder statesman, superstar, and, you know, everybody hanging on his every word, that he now feels like, you know, he's going to get the benefit of the doubt in these things. But even I, Justin Verlander's biggest fan in the world, has to say that you came off kind of like a douchebag, so settle down. Yeah.
He was saucy on Twitter, too, because somebody, I guess, had talked about the no-no. And he's like, I don't believe in jinxes. And Justin Verlander's hitting a no-hitter. And then Verlander, like, quote tweeted him and said, you jinxed it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, he's definitely, like, there's a different attitude going on there. Like, he's always kind of been fun on Twitter, which is nice, but, like, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of funny. Like, I don't know if it's sort of like a leadership thing in his mind that, you know, he's kind of the face of the Astros and they won the World Series and now everybody's coming after him and everybody picked the Yankees. You know, not the smart people, but, you know, like the typical, like, baseball writer, East Coast bias morons who all think, like, oh, the Yankees got Giancarlo Stanton. How could they lose now? Like, Giancarlo Stanton is, you know, one of the top five players of the game, which he isn't. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just some of that nonsense kind of percolating through, but it's like, you've got a beautiful boxer dog. You know, your life is great. You know, I want more Harley pictures. I need less of this nonsense. So,
amen.
Yeah.
More Harley Upton, less being stupid.
Please. I guess to his credit, he's pitching great, so I don't know, maybe it's working, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Was there any other nonsense? No, there really wasn't. Nolan Arenado was like a week and a half ago by now, where he got drilled by Luis Perdomo and charged the mound. We haven't had any mound chargings in the past week, so.
No, Chris Bryant took a pretty ugly beaner to the head.
Yeah.
On the weekend, it was really tough to watch. Like, it knocked his helmet halfway off. He ended up getting a big cut on his, just above his eyebrow from his sunglasses. But all of his tests came back clear, so he is probably going to be back in the game this week.
I mean, it hit him square in the forehead.
Oh, it was, and he just, like, he stayed standing, but he, like, walked towards the dugout immediately.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell his body was just fully on autopilot, because Joe Maddon came up and, like, put an arm around him.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, you could practically see his brain going, hey, Dad, do I have to go to school today? Like,
Where am I? He
was just, like, leaning on Maddon, and he just looked like he was on another planet. Like, he was just like, I want just 5 more minutes in bed. Like, it was... It was just...
Oh, man, I shouldn't laugh, but yeah, it was kind of one of those moments.
It was like, exactly what it was. Like, you could tell that he was just, like, not inhabiting his body in that particular moment.
Yep.
Like, everything was just absolutely on autopilot, and that's scary to see that stuff, and that's why you see a lot of those guys wearing, like, the face cover parts of the...
Yeah, that face guard has been popular this year.
It's gotten a lot of play now, and for good reason. Like, you see a hit like that, and in that case, it didn't hit him in the face, which, by the way, happy one-year anniversary of Jacoby Jones.
That's what I was thinking about, yep, because the way Jacoby Jones kind of, like, he got hit, and he sort of couldn't stay on the ground. He's, like, running around bleeding and then, like, laid down and kind of got up and didn't know what to do with himself.
Well, it's almost like an instant shock.
Yeah,
like,
it is. Yeah,
the body's just like, what do I do? How do I survive? What's going on?
I know, and Bryant's one was so crazy because it hit kind of on the brim of his helmet, and the helmet went 360 around on his head, like above his head a little bit, spun all the way around, back to perfect. I mean, it was cartoonish.
Yeah, and then it was
almost
just like halfway off
terror
his head
at the same time.
Oh. That sort of thing is really scary. Like,
yeah. And he did pick concussion tests, though, right? Isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's fine. I think they just wanted to be precautionary. Oof. So he's not back. He wasn't playing today, but he should be back later this week, I think.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, maybe give him a couple days to kind of collect himself. Because it really seemed like, I mean, even for Jacoby, when he came back, he wasn't the same last year. And I don't know if that really, you know, played into the how bad his season kind of went after that. But, man, it's got to be hard to put that stuff, you know, aside and just go out there and play. The other really scary thing was that Danny Farquhar aneurysm in the White Sox dugout. Woo, I was watching that game.
Crazy.
And all of a sudden, all you could see is all these people in the dugout, like, all milling around. And it kind of looked like there was a fight going on or something like that. And it didn't come out until a little bit later. But, yeah, Danny Farquhar was basically in a coma for a couple days before they could operate on the aneurysm. And, I don't know, you know, listeners of ours may have seen that on Twitter or elsewhere, but yeah, it was a really scary scene. I mean, Danny Farquhar is a 31-year-old healthy athlete, and, you know, we've seen that kind of thing happen sometimes. Nobody's immune to some of these things, but woo, that was terrifying.
And there was nothing in-game. I had a couple people ask me, they're like, well, did he get hit? Did anything happen? And there's nothing. There was nothing leading up to it to give any indication that, like, he should be monitored or that anything might not be okay.
Yeah.
It was just like he was standing, and then he was down. He just passed right out in the dugout, and I don't think anybody knew what was happening, and so they rushed him to the hospital, obviously. And the next day, you got guys like James Shields out there going, how do we even think about baseball right now?
Ugh.
And yeah. like, so that whole team was shaken, but it's been really, really cool. And cool is not the right word, but touching to yeah. see his former teams, like the Blue Jays, the Rays, the Mariners. They've all really embraced this, like, you know, kind of do it for Danny kind of ideal. And they've been hanging his jersey up in their dugouts. And it was really nice to see actually during like the Mariners White Sox matchup, because both of them were his current and former teams. So they both had his jersey up.
Yeah.
And that was nice, because, I mean, you can't know, like, he may never be back in baseball again.
Yeah.
Like, right now, people are just happy to know that he's talking to his doctors and communicating with his family.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he can, like, stand and function and have a normal life after an aneurysm, that's your priority.
Yep. Although it's also true, you know, you just never know with those things. You know, it's just one of those weird things where he kind of popped a bleeder in the brain, and, you know, once that's fixed, you just don't know. Like, is there going to be damage? It's so far, all signs seem to be good. I don't know, you know, whether or not that means he might be able to come back this year. It's all way too early for that. But yeah, at least the news that the surgery was successful and that he's awake and seems to be responding very well to, you know, to his doctors and talking and. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like, you know, it's gone about as well as it could, but yeah, that was a really scary moment.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And it's weird, you know, just kind of opportunely timed that we were talking about the Verlander thing right before this, because yeah, I mean, that's really what it is. It just puts it all in such, you know, such perfect perspective that we're, you know, they're all playing a game, no matter how seriously everyone takes it. There's old reality sticking its dang nose in things.
Yeah. Speaking of which, and we didn't talk about talking about this, but I just wanted to mention something that got posted on Halo's Heaven today.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God! If anybody, Halo's Heaven is the SB Nation's Los Angeles Angels site, and their managing editor Josh Mayhood posted a piece today about his personal struggles with heroin addiction and like how he dealt with that while also trying to run this site, and I think. It's really moving, and it's, I think, really important to read, because he was in our chat room. Like, he was a guy that we peripherally knew all the time, and I had zero clue that that was happening in his life.
Yep.
And I think it's really important to read, just because it's like, it could be anyone you know. Like, addiction's touched my life, it's touched everybody's life in some way.
Yeah, mine too.
But
yeah.
I think it's just one of those things where you can't know what a person's going through, and to kind of like know that that kind of struggle exists for people that are in your life on a daily basis is insane.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really gutsy thing for him to share and to be that honest. And I think
also really well written too. I mean, if you're out there thinking this is going to be like kind of an after school special kind of article, it was gritty and very real. And very well written and powerful.
He doesn't let himself off the hook at all.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to show how it affected his life around baseball, which is something that I think we all know and love. And it changed even his love for that and his ability to function within that. And so I think if you can handle it, and if you're okay reading stuff about addiction and drug use, that it's really worth heading over to Halo's Heaven and reading that piece, because it's something else.
Yeah. Yep. That was a slice of raw honesty that just kind of interjected onto a baseball site that you don't come across very often anywhere. So yeah, it was a heck of a piece. And yeah, I mean, obviously we all wish him all the best, and it's an ongoing
lifelong struggle. So, I mean, obviously he's not fixed, but he's on the right path now. And that's a really, really positive thing to know.
Yeah. And obviously I don't know what the situation is in Canada, but you know, in the United States, you know, opiate addiction has just gone through the roof over the past, you know, 10 years. You know, I mean, we kind of went from like, you know, cocaine crack in the 80s to, you know, there was prescription drugs in the 90s, and then kind of the methamphetamine boom. And now, and, you know, over the last decade, you know, so many opiates have taken so many lives around the country that it's also super relevant just as a larger societal issue that is affecting probably everyone, even if you're not aware of it in some way or the other. So, yeah, if you care to take a look at that, head over to Halo's Heaven and read Josh's piece, because, yeah, it was it made a huge impression on me today. And I know you as well, obviously. So.
Yeah, like, I couldn't imagine just some guy I know in an office having, you know, had to make a pit stop at his heroin dealer's house the morning of.
Yeah.
like, it's eye-opening. It's just really worth the read.
Yep. We're just going to wrap it up today with, I'm just going to kind of run through a little bit of what's been going on in the farm system. It's still too early, so I'm not real, maybe later on as we go, I'll have a little bit more detailed reports to offer people. But really, I mean, so far, like, over the last week, the big news is, you know, Matt Manning made his first start of the year, came out, struck out 9 of the first 10 hitters he faced, and then just kind of ran out of gas because he hasn't pitched in a month. But he looked unhittable. Like, he looked flat out unhittable at that level of baseball. I don't know how long the Tigers are going to be able to keep him in West Michigan, because it just looked like if his fastball is anywhere near the zone, guys just can't see it. They can't get the bat on it hardly at all. And, you know, for him to learn to kind of use all of his pitches and command everything, he's going to need to face a better caliber of hitter, and probably pretty soon, because, you know, I think it was our buddy Hookslide who posted clips of every one of the strikeouts. And I mean, he was just kind of blowing people away with just fastballs right down the middle. And, and hitters were, you know, like, just way late. Let's just say way late on everything. Like, couldn't see it coming out of his hand. And it was pretty impressive looking. So that was kind of
Brandon.
That was kind of the big news. Yeah.
This is where you get to go, I told you so, Keith Law.
I won't even do that yet. There's a long way to go yet. But yeah, Keith Law and I did have a couple of little back and forths last year, because I just could not fathom why he was taking, you know, his one time that he saw him where he wasn't good and his velocity was down compared to, you know, the reports we were seeing, you know, the last couple outings with the Whitecaps. You know, I had a couple people who I know are smart baseball fans all write me and say, like, I've never seen a pitching performance like that. I've never seen hitters that overwhelmed by a guy's fastball. So, and, you know, it's not like he's throwing 100 yet. Maybe he'll get there, but, you know, just the extension and life of the fastball, he was just mowing through people. So, yeah, in your face, Keith Law. Hater. Why do you hate the Tigers farm system? Yeah. No, I'm glad you did.
Give you that one.
Yeah. That's good. Because I wouldn't call out Keith without some encouragement. So.
No, I know.
But we do like
Keith. You'll never hear this. Otherwise, I would not have caved.
Yeah. I mean, I do think people really think, like, Keith Law hates the Tigers farm system. And maybe he does just kind of have, like, a bit of an axe to grind as far as, like, the Tigers' record of developing their own talent that kind of leads him to kind of underestimate a little bit maybe some of the Tigers guys. But, you know, Keith Law has reached out to us. We've all, you know, we've all kind of texted with Keith Law. And, you know, Keith Law's a perfectly cool guy who wrote a really, really damn good book called Smart Baseball last year that came out that people should check out. But, yeah, anyway. Yeah, in your face, Keith Law. Matt Manning's coming for your ass.
Oh my god.
Yeah. As far as the other Tigers aces, like, Alex Fajardo pitched today and pitched very well. There have been some people kind of worrying because his velocity's down a little bit, but, you know, he hasn't pitched, you know, basically since the College Baseball World Series last year, so it's not a surprise that it might take him a little bit to build his velo up. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. Anthony Castro's pitched very well. I'm trying to think if anybody else kind of really, really dominated. Sandy Baez has been reasonably good, while Bo Burrows has kind of struggled a little bit. But, yeah, well, there's a lot of good pitching going on from the Tigers relievers, but it's all just very early, so we're going to take it easy.
Too soon.
Yeah, way too soon. Who else? You know, Isaac Paredes has, I think, got 3 home runs already, and he's kind of our star hitting prospect at this point, position player prospect, I would assume. So he's looked very good so far. Dawa Lugo has been hitting the cover off the ball for the Mud Hens, but still isn't drawing any walks and isn't hitting for that much power, although he did hit his first home run. So I don't know. We'll see if we have a second baseman of the future there. I think it's going to take a lot of proving. But
you know how we could get that, Brandon?
Yeah, we could. No.
I'm never going to get what I want, and it makes me real sad.
I know.
Well, coming soon this week, I will write about Nick Madrigal and how we will never draft him.
I know. You know, the thing is, though, Nick Madrigal has been out for about a month with, I think, what was it, like a broken wrist or a sprained wrist or something? Some kind of hand injury. But anyway, Nick Madrigal has 1 month to just rage and change everybody's minds, and I really hope he can do it, because we both really like the idea of getting yourself a bona fide middle infielder that basically is going to be a 3 or 4 war player. Without things even having to break all that much right. Like, he just seems like, you know, lock to be an above average second baseman in the major leagues very soon.
Yes. I want my future Ian Kinsler. I will.
That's who he is, too. He's a Pedroia Kinsler type dirtbag. He's a savage. Kylie McGain, like, he's not all Fangraphs.
But he's absolutely in that, like, Kinsler niche. And I want him.
Yep, I know it. But there is a little time, so, and he's been out, so he's just kind of off the radar, and maybe if he makes a big run. The thing I've seen, like, covering the draft the past couple of years is it's almost ridiculous how, you know, fast, you know, a guy can rise up or fall based on, like, a week or two of baseball. You know, a guy can play baseball for, like, 20 years of his life, and, like, he has one bad week, and all of a sudden he's not the number 2 prospect anymore, he's the number 12 prospect, and it's like, you know, if I analyze baseball with these level of samples, you know, people would just laugh me out of the, off the site, so... It is kind of weird, but I'm sure, you know, NFL football draft followers will know that, you know, this is just the way it goes as far as draft stuff.
Yeah.
But we do like us some Nick Madrigal, for sure. I still like Casey Mize. I won't be mad. I like Jared Kelenic. Alex Bohm, I don't like as much. You know, there's a couple other guys who maybe will work their way in here, but I really wish the Tigers would just draft Nick Madrigal and just say, okay, we're halfway to having our middle infield of the future. We've got pitchers up the wazoo coming. And all we really need to do is add, you know, I mean, we saw what you could get a bat for this offseason, like Jay Bruce, you know, signing for like $13, $14 million a year. You can get a couple of guys to patrol the corners and hit the crap out of the ball for you. If your middle infield is set and you've got catcher the way we think we do with Jake Rogers and some of the younger guys, you know, we've got Daz Cameron and, I don't know, Derek Hill's having a rough start, but maybe still Derek Hill to play center in the future. And right now, you know, Jacoby Jones is looking like he might seize that job and kind of make all of that moot. So Nick Madrigal would really fill a hole.
He'd really tie that
farm system together, guys.
I think for me, yeah, the rug that holds the room together.
Yeah.
For me, it's just like, I feel like picking him over the typical hard-throwing righty, it just shows that you're trying to build that team as opposed to, like, draft pieces. Like, keep trying to recreate the Justin Verlander pickup. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you're just not going to find that very often. And Casey Mize is not going to be Justin Verlander. I'm willing to make a bet with anybody who wants that he will not have Justin Verlander's career. He'll probably be a pretty solid starting pitcher if he's healthy and stays healthy. You know, guys don't stay healthy the way Justin Verlander does. He's just a freak.
No.
So you can't really bet on that. And yeah, you know, I mean, we've got a lot of pitching prospects. I mean, you put Casey Mize at Erie, like you're bumping out a pretty good arm. We've got enough guys between Advanced A and Double A. Some of the younger level, we probably could use a little bit more help. But yeah, I we'll just have to wait and see, because like I said, things could change really fast. Maybe Nick Madrigal just goes crazy and we could just, like, write numerous articles just screeching at the Tigers front office not to be stupid.
I'll just post one every other day because I would just, draft Nick Madrigal.
Yep. You get him. I mean, you got Jake Rogers at catcher. We've got Candelario at third. We've got some center field options. You're a pretty good way to having a decent, you know, decent set of position players again. And that's without even having to go and do something like trade Michael Fulmer. You know, we've got Fulmer, Boyd, and Norris. We've got Joe Jimenez. And there's a ton of arms coming. So, yeah, if they could just get that, you know, get that middle infield set and let those arms kind of feed into the system as they will, you know, they might be in pretty good shape within 2-3 years and able to spend and start pushing toward the top again.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, all right, we'll see how it goes. I'm sure there'll be plenty of time.
They're not paying
us
for these opinions, Brandon. We don't know anything.
I know. I know the Tigers know everything. The Tigers are all wise. At least Chris Fazio maybe is. So.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up there with our Nick Madrigal sadness.
We're just ending on a real high note now.
Yep, exactly.
We talked about heroin addiction and the draftee we're probably not going
to
get.
Yeah, I want you all to go out and read Halo 7 and read A Sad Tale of Heroin Addiction and then watch copious video of Nick Madrigal until you're ready to weep. These are your
Happy
lessons.
Wednesday, everyone.
Yep, enjoy a doubleheader of Tigers baseball on Wednesday afternoon. Yeah, and it'll be Tigers Pirates baseball, which is of course like the most irritating brand of baseball possible. For some reason, the Pirates play it.
PNC.
I know, I do love PNC, but man, the Pirates play an irritating brand of baseball. Yeah, always tough. Too. So, yeah, so that should be fun. So, all right, I'm gonna do the Tigers SRD podcast over on that show with our buddy Roger Martin and Chris Brown on Thursday. I believe Rob Burjacki and I are going to record the Patreon podcast next week. And of course, Ashley and I will be back at our normal time. You can find Ashley at 90 Feet From Home on Twitter. You can find me at Fiscadoro74 on Twitter. And you can follow us, of course, and read all of our magical content at blessyouboys.com. Ashley, have a good week.
You too.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.